On this week's Ludini Rock and Roll Circus podcast, we're going to do a deep dive into one of the greatest albums of all time. I don't say that lightly. This is literally one of the greatest albums of all time. The Who's Next was a phoenix rising from the ashes of a multimedia concept project called Lifehouse, which nearly destroyed the band. But Townsend and Company salvaged the best tracks from Lifehouse and, along with engineer Glyn Johns, gave birth to rock history. Let's talk about it. Get ready to rock out with your talk out. It's the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Boys and girls, moms and dads, children of all ages, welcome to the circus. I am your ringmaster, Lou Dini. Some people know me as Lou Lombardi. In the studio with us this evening is the lovely, the talented, the amazing, the stupendously wonderful Miss Lily V6.
What's up?
What's up, Lily?
Thank you for that lovely introduction.
All right, let's turn you up a little
All bit. The way up.
No, now don't yell.
No, don't yell.
There you are.
Just talk regular.
Talk regular.
I got you. Hello.
Talk regular. And we have special audience member / special guest, Pittsburgh Kevin. What's up, Pittsburgh Kevin?
Lou, you know me, right?
We know you.
I'm doing good, Lou.
We need a little better level on Pittsburgh
Dude,
Kevin.
Okay, I'm going to talk in your microphone, okay?
Keep He's talking here. Into the microphone.
Can you hear me? A, B, C, D,
there
1, 2, 3,
we go.
4.
Now we got some Pittsburgh
All
Kevin
right.
with us tonight.
How you doing out there in podcast land?
All right. So, want to give a shout out to Wolf's Customs, wolfscustoms.online. Guys, I've been telling you about it for months. Go out there, get a hold of Chris Thunderwolf Dodson at Wolf's Customs Online. Get an awesome custom paint job done on your musical instrument. They do everything. To any musical instrument you like. So check it out. Go to wolfscustoms.online. Talk to Chris Thunderwolf Dodson. Tell him Ludini sent you. Rock Rage Radio. Go to rockrageradio.com. Download the app. And that way you can listen to great guitar-driven rock 24-7. As well as go to our website, lulombardimusic.com. And there's all kind of free downloads. And I put out cool emails. I'm going to be doing more stuff like that. I'm working on some great stuff to just send just to the folks on the list. And get first access to new releases and things like that. I got some new music coming out real soon. As well as my band, TKMD, is in studio right now. Finishing up an album. So we're going to be really excited to tell you guys about all of that stuff. As I said, we have Lily V6. Lily V6 is a celebrity on Rock Rage Radio. What's up, Lily?
What's up? My show is Hot Licks with Lily 6, Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And there are no interviews this week, but I have all the music from bands that are going to be at the show this weekend, a brutal weekend at the Subalpine. So listen for that.
Brutal!
So good stuff.
It's a brutal weekend. Okay. And, would you guys like to, who here would like to win a free Ludini t-shirt? Ludini Rock and Roll Circus t-shirt. We're giving away a free t-shirt. What you got to do is you have to give us a good review, 5 stars on iTunes. When you go to iTunes, when you search us on iTunes, there's a little thing that says rate and review. Click that. Give us a review. Use your mobile device to take a picture of it or screen cap or whatever. And email it to lou@loulombardimusic.com. And you'll be entered into a drawing.
A drawing.
Cheeky monkey.
To win a free Ludini Rock and Roll Circus t-shirt. So go to iTunes, do the review thing, screen cap it, take a picture, whatever, and send it to lou@loulombardimusic.com. Is there anything else I'm forgetting? I take notes.
I like your pink notes.
Pink notes. Wolf's Customs, Rock Rage, mm-hmm. the iTunes review. Well, mm-hmm. I covered all the bases, mm-hmm. I think, for now. So that's pretty much it. How do you guys want to start?
At the beginning.
It's a very good place to start.
And then we get to the end, we'll stop.
And we'll get to the end of stuff. Who's Next is one of the greatest albums ever. If you never heard it, go out and get it. And that's pretty much the end of the podcast. Thank you for listening.
And we're out. We can do a brief history, although you did do a brief history.
Let's go ahead and do a little bit of get dig into it just a little bit deeper there with the how it got started and what was going on.
Alrighty. Who's Next by The Who, August 14th, 1971, 10 years before I was born, but I am familiar with the album, fifth studio album. Like Lou said, it developed from the aborted Lifehouse project, which was going to be a rock opera to follow Tommy, which I'm sort of glad they didn't do that, because then we'd have another really silly movie that I can't sit through. But they did salvage some of the songs for the next album. 8 of the 9 songs from Lifehouse were featured on this album. The one that was not was My Wife. That was written by John Entwistle. It's heavy on the use of synthesizer, especially for songs Won't Get Fooled Again and Baba O'Reilly. It was an immediate success when it was released, viewed by many critics as the best album, or their best album, and one of the greatest albums of all time. It was reissued on CD several times with additional songs originally intended for Lifehouse. The first session for which became Who's Next was at Mick Jagger's house, Stargroves, recorded there at the start of April 1971 using the Rolling Stones mobile studio. And that's what I got.
Okay, that's the there you have it. That's the, sort of like the beginning of it. Let's talk a little wee bit before we get into Who's Next. You got to put this in kind of history. Tommy was a total like revelation. Nobody had done. In fact, Pete Townsend was sort of jokingly calling it a rock opera as they were developing it, and it was really Kit Lambert that was like, no, like let's go with that. You know, let's. Kit Lambert was their manager and producer at the time, and he worked very closely with Pete, and he really encouraged this rock opera thing, and it really became big, like freaking huge. When the movie version of it came out, there is it has tons of rock stars, right? Pittsburgh Kevin,
tons of him,
right?
Tons of
Eric Clapton, Elton John,
right?
Tina Turner.
Oh yeah,
she's the acid queen.
She's beautiful.
Plus other stars like Anne Margaret.
Yeah. Well, I was going to talk about Anne Margaret in a second.
Sorry,
because Anne sort of bristled at the idea of doing this for her. She didn't understand it. She just thought it was weird. And and her manager was like, you need to do this because this is like a really going to be a very kind of important thing that's going to happen. And you're given an opportunity. You should do this. And it really kind of took this actress who was kind of like associated kind of with the Brat Pack and that whole thing and really made her hip in the eyes of this sort of rock and roll, psychedelic hippie people in that generation. It kind of like reintroduced her to like a whole new audience. So it was a total tour de force. It was like just like one of the biggest things that happened right up there with Sgt. Pepper's and all. And a lot of big stuff was happening at that time. So they released this thing and, you know, then I believe really what happened was Live at Leeds, which I believe was the actual record they did before Who's Next. But it's a live album, you know, not really
not
doing
same.
Any material. You know, they didn't have to create anything for it. But they were touring on the Tommy thing, and it was huge and everything. So they were under great pressure to try to come up with something bigger and badder and more exciting and more iconic and more classic. No pressure.
No.
Just relax and make a record. There was no just like, we're just going to go back and make a normal Who record. And I think that, and Pete Townsend had some ideas. It was that, and he was also, Pete is a visionary. He's one of these guys that's always kind of reaching for higher concepts and whatnot. And this Lifehouse thing that he started to develop was like even beyond a rock opera. What they were trying to do was to create audience participation so the audience would be part of the show. And they were going to combine that with multimedia stuff. And eventually it was going to become a film. But the idea was to create this kind of experience called Lifehouse. And the story behind it was that in the future, people would not live in real life. They would be hooked up to something. At the time, nobody knew about the internet. Nobody knew about virtual reality or any of that stuff. But essentially, that's what Pete was envisioning, is that people would be tied to some sort of fake reality that would be telling them things that would be influencing them to, you know, vote certain ways and to buy certain things. And it was incredibly prophetic, it turned out. But
so Lou, he invented the Matrix.
Yes.
Whoa.
That's exactly what it was. It was kind of like the Matrix. And but here's the problem.
That sounds all familiar.
Here's the problem with it, though. And did you ever do this? You guys ever do this? Like, you get really excited about something and you try to make it happen, and like, it just ain't happening.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, no matter what you do, like, and this is what happened with Lifehouse. they did set it up, and they were doing like live versions of it, and it just never really gelled with the audience. The audience was just like, play My Generation. We want to hear Pinball Wizard. You know, like, they just wanted to go and hear The Who rock out. They didn't really need this.
They didn't want to be involved.
Yeah. And Townsend kind of ended up alienating the band over this. They didn't understand, like, what was going on. They were frustrated with it. And then how do you take something like this and make a record out of it? Like, you know, nobody had entertainment centers in their houses, and no, you know, it was like nothing like that. You know, little TV about the, you know, about 12 inches or something like that, you know? So there was no way to like do anything with this multimedia thing.
Way ahead of its time.
Yeah. It was just too far ahead of its time. It just wasn't going to work. And Roger Daltrey later said that the Who was never closer to breaking up than it was during this period. Cause they just were like not having it. So they did something they absolutely did not want to do, and that was to throw the whole thing out and start over. The songs had been recorded multiple times, multiple places, and Pete Townsend often jokes that one of the reasons why it sounds so great is because they've recorded some of the songs like 50 times.
I mean,
you would get it right after 50 freaking times. But they got together. What ended up happening when they went to New York? Kit Lambert, their manager and producer, started doing heroin, and Pete was really afraid that he was going to bring Moon the Loon into the heroin thing, and he was dead because Keith Moon would do anything. Like, I don't know, is that a drug? I'll take it. So they ended up ousting Lambert. It's kind of self-produced record. But they did work with Glyn Johns, and Glyn is a studio ace. Like, he really can work the studio. And they all were really just wowed by the sounds they were getting, and they would hear the playbacks. They couldn't believe how great it sounded. So it really re-energized them. And the songs that you hear, as Lily and I have said, are basically reworked things from Lifehouse, and with the exception of the John Entwistle penned My Wife, which is kind of a quirky kind of song, you know.
It's an interesting song.
And we're
going to
get into that in a few minutes. We're going to break down the songs and go through them song by song here in a minute. But just, I wanted to give you guys a deeper picture about this record. So it was fraught with all kind of problems, nearly broke up the band, but ultimately ended up becoming a masterpiece. And some of the songs from Lifehouse, and maybe Lily can talk about this later, we can look it up. Some of the songs ended up on other albums down the line. They sort of started because he's Pete Townsend, and he's a freaking amazing songwriter. And why not? You know, let's use these great songs. It would just like be stupid. And one of the things, and Pete Townsend to this day is kind of bummed out that the Lifehouse thing didn't work out, but that's because in his mind these songs are all connected to this sort of concept, this project. But to us, they're just great songs. The great song is a great song. If I can rock out to it and get, you know, sing along to it, it's a great song. So that is the sort of like a little more detailed explanation as to how Who's Next evolved and how it came about and the sort of circumstances behind it. So let's go ahead. And do you want to get in? Do you want to do a track by track situation with this?
A track by track situation.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So what song leads off the album, Lily?
Baba O'Reilly.
Baba O'Reilly, aka
Teenage Wasteland.
Teenage Wasteland,
which actually was the working title of the song. I did not know that, but he changed it. The opening track on the album. Roger Daltrey sings most of the song, with Pete Townsend singing the middle part, you know, don't cry, don't raise your eye. I don't sing, so it ain't happening. One of the Lifehouse songs originally where a Scottish farmer named Ray would have sung the song at the beginning as he gathered his wife Sally and two children to begin their exodus to London. So that's how their story turned out, if it was a Lifehouse interesting thing. This song appears in Time Magazine's all-time 100 songs list, Rolling Stone's list of the 500 greatest songs of all time, and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as one of the 500 songs that shaped rock and roll. According to Townsend, at the end of the band's gig at the 1969 Isle of Wight Festival, the field was covered in rubbish left by fans, which inspired the line Teenage Wasteland. In another interview, Townsend stated that the song was also inspired by the absolute desolation of teenagers at Woodstock. So the audience members were all strung out on acid. 20 people ended up getting brain damage. The irony was that some listeners took the song as a teenage celebration, not, you know, a poo-pooing on how people are acting. The song's title combines the names of Meru Baba and Terry Riley, two of Townsend's philosophical and musical mentors, which he does talk about and is involved in all the songs, I think, pretty much.
Yeah, one of the things that Townsend said was that, oops, I don't want to do that. How do I get rid of that?
I'm not sure. There's no X.
Yeah, I'm looking for an X. One of the things that the Townsend said was, while he did not like psychedelics, in fact, by this time, he was pretty much drug-free. They did a little drinking. Yeah. He liked the spiritual side of what was happening. And so that was very influential to him, as opposed to the drug part of it. The song is not about, it's like, let's get wasted and party!
Which is what everybody thinks.
He felt that what was going on was these people were wasting their lives. These kids were literally, it was about waste. And, you know, what a waste it was, what was happening to young people. Sorry to burst your bubble if, you know, you went to a Who show and they played this and you, you know, drank your ass off and vomited or whatever. No, that's not what the song is about. The synthesizer, or the, excuse me, the thing at the beginning is a Lowry organ. And Pete worked on this for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And he was trying to replicate what he would think, what he thought electronic music of the future might sound like. And one of the things that, like, when you bring this a song, when you work on a song at home and you bring it to the studio to work on it with your producer or whatever, they usually go, okay, we got the kernel of the idea, let's cut this, let's do that, let's put this over here. But when Glyn Johns heard it, he was like, let's just use that because that's great. We don't need to really do anything. We don't really need to do anything with it. When the band plays it live, the process organ is actually played from a recording. Sorry. It'd be really hard to replicate that on any kind of instrument. The guitar doesn't come in till a minute 40, giving Townsend time to reflect on his work. There was this moment of standing there just listening to this music and looking out into the audience just thinking, I effing did that. I wrote that. He told Rolling Stone, I just hope that on my deathbed, I don't embarrass myself by asking someone, can you pass me my guitar? And will you run the backing tape of Bubba O'Reilly? I just want to do it one more time. But it is, right? We all grew up, Kevin.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, do you remember hearing this on the radio? Mm-hmm. Just being like, the
gobsmacked. Just wondering, what, how did he make that sound? Well, now we know.
This is a song I used to play a lot whenever I first started going down to Southside and drinking. But not at the clubs, because God forbid if you
down
played
one
alleys.
Of this.
Yes, in the alley bars is where you would play this. You can't play this at the clubs because people will freak out. But yeah, it's one of the songs I played frequently when I went down to Southside.
There's so many things.
Tons of stuff.
This is
a
theme song for the TV show CSI New York, which launched in 2004, the third CSI franchise. Every CSI uses a theme song by The Who. For the original crime scene investigations, Who Are You? Mm-hmm. And the Miami one uses Won't Get Fooled Again. And CSI Cyber uses I Can See for Miles. So congratulations to The Who. It was used in commercials for 2000 Nissan Pathfinder.
I remember that.
Also appeared in ads for Cisco. who lost a lot of money on bad business deals in their early years and decided to cash in when they were offering big bucks for commercials. Sad thing that happened to a lot of artists from that era who really saw no money.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It just, you know, record labels, managers and stuff like that just
took it.
Yep. And do you guys know who Black Francis is, a.k.a. Frank Black, the Pixies?
Oh, yes.
Sure.
He finds the song rather intriguing. He broke it down in an interview with Song Facts. It's not just straight up verse, chorus, verse, chorus, verse, chorus. I was always impressed by that song, the way that it changes, the way the end of the song sort of becomes the chorus by eliminating one of the words. It removes a minor chord, and it's an outro, I guess, but it feels like, oh, here we are in the chorus again, even though it's not really. It's totally different than anything that came before it, so I really like the song. Songs like that, I tend to deconstruct a little and try to understand what it is that I'm hearing. I think that's the kind of coolest dude. There are so many things. There's so much written about this song, and we can spend a whole podcast talking about the song.
Just about this song.
So, yeah, so we're gonna kind of knock it off there. I'm sorry if I did not mention some fact about the song that you wanted me to say, but there's literally tons of stuff on it. If you go to songfacts.com and search The Who, like about 30 or 40 of their songs are on there, including this one. You can get more information for yourself. So, Bubba. Oh.
Riley.
Mary Riley.
It's not to be confused with Radar O'Reilly.
Yeah. What? It's not Radar O'Reilly?
It's not Radar O'Reilly.
I always thought it was Radar O'Reilly.
Oh, I know. You get confused sometimes.
You see how I get? I haven't had my pills today. So.
Oh, my God.
So what's next?
Bargain is next.
That a bargain. The best I ever had.
It's a love song, but it's not what you think it's about. It's not about a woman. It's actually about God. So says Pete Townsend. The lyrics are a typical love song type lyrics, which the singer says he will give up everything to win his love. And that singer would consider that a bargain. Townsend acknowledged during the Who's concert at the Prudential Center, Newark, March 19th, 2016, that this is his favorite song on the album. At least 9 versions of Bargain were recorded between April and June 1971. As Lou said, they did tons of different versions of their songs, or, you know, redid them. Author John Atkins praised the song's strength and melody, as well as the Who's performance of the song, and goes on to say that Bargain radiates sheer dynamism and excitement, and the brilliance of playing turns the song into a masterpiece. And I agree. It's not, like, my favorite song on the album, but I definitely think it's a dynamic song.
The guitar. Lead guitar was played on a vintage Gretsch on the song. A gift from none other than Joe Walsh.
Nice.
Really?
Before he was in the Eagles. People forget that Joe Walsh was a huge rock star because of the James Gang. Mm-hmm. Like, before he was ever in the Eagles.
But people know because of the Eagles.
And a lot of people wish that he would have continued with the James Gang. Felt that they liked their music a lot better. Roger Daltrey sings most of it, but sounds and sings the part that says, I sit looking round, I look at my face in the mirror. And that's one of the things about The Who that is so cool, is their way these guys trade off on vocals sometimes. And a lot of bands don't do that. Now the band that kind of comes to mind is going to be this. These sound nothing like The Who, but this does kind of remind me what The Who did is Chester Bennington, what were they called? Oh, come on.
I don't know.
In the end. They sang In the End.
Linkin Park.
You got the one guy rapping, you got the other guy singing. It's a kind of like a Townsend Daltrey kind of thing. Kind of. The fact that they trade off. But not for the most part, not a lot of bands do that. The synthesizer used on Bargain was the same synth used to call the extraterrestrials in the 1977 movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
That's cool.
Really?
I like that.
Bum, 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 bum. All right, let's go on, because we could go forever.
Keep on going.
The next song is Love Ain't for Keeping. The theme is joy and physical love, the power of nature, and we need to live for the moment. At 2 minutes and 10 seconds, It's the shortest song on the Who's Next album. It is also one of the lightest songs on the album and one of the few not to use synthesizers. An earlier version of the song recorded in New York City with Kit Lambert producing was more of a hard rock song and included synthesizers as well as electric guitars, which I have never heard this version, so I really need to look that up. It was originally conceived as part of Townsend's abandoned Lifehouse project. The song, referring to the best-known version on Who's Next, has been described as a blues-tinged country love song.
If you are familiar with the there's a great version of it on Odds and Sods, which is a more harder, heavier version. In fact, live, they sort of were like a heavier kind of band.
I never got to see them.
Yeah, they sort of, like, if you listen to any of their stuff, it's like the live versions, the guitars are more cranked up. It sort of has a more aggressive kind of thing. Yeah. Love Ain't For Keeping. Great freaking song. What's next?
My Wife is next, written by bass guitarist John Entwistle. While it did appear on the Who's Next, it was not part of the Lifehouse project, like we said earlier, and it also was not included in Pete Townsend's Lifehouse Chronicles that came out way later, the box set. Song is about a man who has gone out and gotten drunk and been gone for a period of time because he was locked up in the drunk tank, and is in fear of his wife because she thinks he's spending time with another woman. And the song describes in first person all the things he needs to have to do to protect himself from her wrath. Boy, does this sound familiar. I was married once. My Wife is arguably John Entwistle's highlight on Who's Next, being that he takes on the lead vocals, bass guitar, piano, and horn section. And the song does not feature a guitar solo, which is most likely because Entwistle could only write bass guitar or in his head and just transfer it to manuscript paper or piano. So he didn't play that. instead of a guitar solo, the longer breaks between verses, there's a horn part by Entwistle.
Yeah, that's him playing, and they cut the horns very quickly. It was all the horns in it were laid down in about a half an hour. He just busted them out. Wow. And if you he redoes it on the classic album documentary, if you get a chance to check it out. It's on YouTube in multiple parts. You can watch it. But yeah, it's a simple little thing. The song is funny. It is based on an argument that he had with his wife, but he has said over and over that it's exaggerated. It's not that he exaggerated it. He took it, and, used his imagination and, made it a little juicier for the song.
Sure.
And we are approaching the last song on the first side. This is something we should talk about this real quick. I actually have the vinyl album. I'm having it in the studio right now.
Which is cool.
Those of you that are watching the video feed, I'm holding up. We need to talk about the album cover.
I have it. I have intro.
We'll get to that. Yeah, let's finish side one.
Okay.
But what I wanted to show everybody is in the old days, there was side one and side two.
Yes.
So it was important what song ended the side. Because it kind of like, it was like a kind of intermission, right,
yeah.
guys?
Right.
You know,
right.
When we listen to albums and you would like,
there was a lot of thought put into.
There was a lot of thought into
how
what
that
song
was laid out.
The orders of the songs and stuff like that. This wasn't just throwaway stuff just to do something. And we're going to talk about the album cover after we finish talking about this. But the song that ends side one is Song Is Over. And very appropriate. So let's talk about Song Is Over.
It was also supposed to be the ending song on Lifehouse. It takes place after the police invade the Lifehouse Theater and Concert Goers Disappear. One of the tracks on Who's Next with lead vocals by both Pete and Roger and piano work by Nicky Hopkins. According to Pete Townsend, the song provides a mixture of being sad and wistful, but at the same time, it's a high point. Biographer John Atkins remarks that the two singers' contrasting voices work wonderfully well. And he considers Daltrey's voice to be the song's strongest feature, but also praises Keith Moon's superb controlled drumming, John Entwistle's expressive bass, and the beautiful rich synthesizer chords on verses. I knew I was going to mess that up.
In other words, the whole thing is freaking awesome.
The whole thing is great.
yeah, it's a really beautiful track. And again, this is one of those songs that he absolutely loved and wanted, it was a centerpiece of Lifehouse. But you mentioned Nicky Hopkins.
Yes.
And what some people don't realize is there's actually a lot of guest musicians on this record. Some of them are not the songs that they played on did not make it onto the album. Nicky Hopkins, of course, and Al Cooper, famous organist. He plays the organ on the Bob Dylan, Like a Rolling Stone, is on an alternative version of Behind Blue Eyes. And guitar legend himself, Leslie West, was hired for this as well. And plays on a track called Baby, Don't You Do It, which did not make the album, and an alternate version of Love Ain't For Keeping. Love Ain't For Keeping, the version on the album is more acoustic, whereas there's a heavier version that they brought Leslie West in. Leslie was a New York fixture, friend of the band, and just really well-respected guitarist at that time. And so I found that really fascinating that these, amazing classic musicians were part of this. Real quick, Nicky Hopkins has done like everything. He's like played with everybody. The Stones, the Kinks, the Who, all the bands. So
that were popular at that time.
they were all those late 60s bands. Before we move on to side two, which is... by the way, there's only 9 tracks on this thing.
Mm-hmm. It's a short one.
But before we move on to side two, and that opens with a great song, let's talk a minute about the album cover. And do you have anything on the back cover as well? On the photo on the back? But go talk about the cover.
So. We'll see how I wrote it down.
Okay. It's fine.
The cover artwork shows a photograph of the band apparently having just urinated on a large concrete piling protruding from a slag heap, as you saw. The decision to shoot the picture came from Entwistle and Moon discussing Stanley Kubrick's very famous film, 2001: Space Odyssey.
It is a kind of homage to that. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's interesting.
According to the photographer Ethan Russell, only Townsend actually urinated on it. Nobody else did. They dumped water on it to make the rest of it. The sky in the background was added later to give the image what Russell called the otherworldly quality. And in 2003, the television channel VH1 named Who's Next cover one of the greatest album covers of all time. I do not have anything about the back cover, I guess. But there were alternative ideas for this cover, which
yes,
I thought
let's
was interesting.
Talk about that.
It included the group urinating against a Marshall stack and an overweight nude woman with the Who's face is placed in her on where her genitalia are.
It's such a fine line between clever and stupid.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Also, gets better, an alternative cover featuring Moon dressed in black lingerie and a brown wig holding a whip was later used for the inside art of the 1995 and 2003 CD releases. Some of the photographs taken during these sessions were later used as part of Decca's United States promotion of the album. So I do not have anything on the back cover. I just had stuff on the front and the alternatives.
It was just a picture of them backstage, somebody that, one of the photographers that followed them around took. And just being goofy, having a good time, as they all were in that era. But yeah, the cover is so iconic; it's so captivating. Mm-hmm. And at that time, guys, right? Kevin and I are same age. That was you would pick a record. You might even buy a record
just from the album cover.
I've done that.
It would just be like, this is, looks cool. I don't know what this is. and if you didn't know the name of the band, then it like that definitely added
now you're
to
like,
it.
Oh, yeah.
But this is just and I think too because of the size. Now this is something that this is where cassette tapes and CDs and whatnot just sort of fall down. They just can't compete with the fact that this is just the perfect size.
Lovely surface area.
Yeah, there's just enough surface area. This is like a mini poster.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And. But you can still, stack it, and there's a spine where it has the name and everything, and they really maximized what an album could be with that artwork. It is absolutely just mind blowing. You can stare at it and think about it, and then there's just the sense of humor. That's the thing about the Who. They always had this sense of humor about everything they did. You know, they did album titles like Meaty Beaty Big and Bouncy and things like that. You know, just to be, they always had that kind of thing going on. Early on when they were a mod act, I mean, Pete Townsend knew that their primary audience was not women. Was men. So I think that this, with them urinating on a thing, is a total guy kind of joke.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know what I mean? Dudes do that.
You know what I mean? It's just like, you know, it's a total like guy thing.
I kind of find I would have trouble peeing on a wall, but I mean,
yeah.
There's that.
And then if we wanted to take it even further, yes, it's four guys that just whipped out their dicks, and the monolith could be phallic symbol.
You think?
So,
I mean, Stanley, if they were going by Stanley Kubrick, definitely.
So, mm-hmm. You know, it's just we could go all day on that. But anyways, so that's the cover. I wanted to make sure that we addressed it because it is so iconic. Now, what is so awesome is because the album side one ends with "the song is over." The side two starts with what?
Getting in tune.
Getting in tune. So, no, the song is not really over. We're just getting in tune now.
Right.
So let's talk about Getting in Tune. It's a great song.
Originally written as part of Townsend's Again Lifehouse project, the lyrics describe power of music as well as reflect the inner contradictions Townsend was feeling at the time between his spiritual needs and his rock star persona that he had. The music incorporates a number of changes in tempo and has been praised by critics for its use of dynamics. The song lyrics begin by nothing that the singer doesn't really have anything to say. However, the lead singer is fed up with the superficiality. Wow, I got it right. Nice. And thus is getting in tune to the straight and narrow. So it was sort of an inner battle with he wanting to be a rock star and his spiritual awakening, I guess.
Yeah. And what's so interesting is Townsend over the years has, you know, he became a solo artist and had great success. Let My Love Open the Door. How many movie closing credits play Let My Love Open the Door, right?
Exactly.
So he toured and performed tons and tons of solo artists and played these songs. And what is so interesting is to hear when he will sing something that Daltrey traditionally sang. And he brings a whole other kind of thing. And I've heard him do Getting in Tune many times. And it's just, he just brings he finds a different kind of emotion or something in it. It's absolutely beautiful. But I think that's what makes a great rock band, isn't it, guys? Like, everybody bringing their, like, something vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is that they have and they bring to it.
Their little spice.
Yeah. And I mean, this record, too, is kind of them, but they're, like, I mean, they've done so many things up to that point. They went through the whole mod thing. Can't explain. Then they do this rock opera and Live at Leeds, which is a big thing. And, you know, they come to this thing and they at this point they're like really seasoned. You know what I mean? Like everybody's kind of at the top of their game. I mean, Daltrey sounds amazing. Even Keith Moon, what a lot of people don't realize is there's still a lot of fills, but he really reining it in. He's really, out of all their stuff up to this point, he's really playing the groove way more than kind of like what he was typically known for. So he's a little bit restrained on this record, but still just holding it down and just kicking freaking ass. It's great. So great song, Getting in Tune. Now,
I was going to say we have some comments.
Well, we have some comments. So let's go. I could talk all day. I love this album, as you can tell.
He could talk all night. Anyway, we have a few watchers. Bill Thomas said this is the first album he ever bought, and he says hi to Pittsburgh Kevin.
Brother.
Chris, Thunderwolf, and Raven are on. Charlie Doyle, Bullet is on. And asked me if I was going to the show this weekend. Yes. Bill Damiano, did I say that already? No. And Beth, across the street. Beth, she says bonjour.
Hi, Beth.
Hi, Beth.
So there's that.
Yeah. So the next track is a Townsend, speaking of Pete Townsend singing, is Going Mobile. So let's talk about that.
The lyrics are celebrating the joy of having a mobile home and being able to travel the open road, which I totally agree with maybe when I'm a little older. Townsend himself had acquired a mobile home about a year before the song was recorded. The lead singer, Roger Daltrey, did not take part in the recording of the song, leaving the rest of the band to record as a power trio. Townsend handles the lead vocals, guitars, and synthesizers, with John Entwistle on bass guitar and Keith Moon on drums. The song has attracted mixed reviews from music critics. Rolling Stone's John Mendelsohn described the song as inane. However, the Rolling Stone Record Guide by John Swenson described Going Mobile as one of Townsend's most beautiful songs.
Pete Townsend has said that, you know, one of the inspirations for the song was that, like, you know, the whole idea of before it was the environmental movement, it's called the ecology movement. The people who were concerned about the environment. And one of the criticisms has always been automobiles. And he has a kind of different take on it. He sees it as a kind of way, this is a kind of insult, because we need to move. We need to get out and explore our environment. We need to get around. We need to be able to be free. And the whole song has that whole vibe. I mean, it's about, like, let's get in the car and let's freaking go. I don't care about pollution. I'm an air-conditioned gypsy. It's my solution. That's what he says. Watch the tax man. Yep. Watch the police and the tax man miss me. I'm mobile. And, you know, is it? I don't know, and I don't have any notes on this, but I can't believe this has not been used by Sprint or Verizon or AT&T to right. sell cell phones.
Give right?
This huge. It's not.
Maybe they couldn't afford it at the time.
Yeah.
So I can't believe that they didn't grab it, you know. For one, so I'm putting a little marketing idea in somebody's ear out there.
Hopefully you get
and,
a cut.
And hopefully that Daltrey and Townsend can get a little bit more money. since you know that they're hurting and everything. But great track, Lily. Just absolutely love it. Kevin, we'll finish this up, and I don't want to talk to Pittsburgh Kevin about maybe what some of his, what his favorite tracks are off of this album. So we are counting down. Oh my goodness, this song... Lily, right?
Speaking
right,
of my favorite track, not just Kevin's track.
This is such an amazing song.
But my favorite track is this one, which is Behind Blue Eyes. Obviously, because I have blue eyes, so there's that. One of the best-known Who recordings ever, been covered by many artists. The idea originated after a Who concert in Denver in June of 1970. Following the performance, Townsend became tempted by a female groupie.
Oh, my.
That doesn't
oh
happen. My. But instead, oh he went back to his room alone. Possibly as a result of the teachings of his spiritual leaders. And upon reaching his room, he began writing a prayer. The first words being, when my fist clenches, crack it open. When Behind Blue Eyes was to be released as part of the aborted Lifehouse project, the song was sung from the point of view of the main villain, Jumbo, which I didn't read enough into it to know who Jumbo is. So there's that. The lyrics are a first person lament from Jumbo, who is always angry. And full of angst because of all the pressure and temptation that surrounds him. And the song was intended to be his theme song had the project been successful. Pete Townsend also recorded two solo versions of the song. The original demo of the song was featured on the Scoop album. The demo, along with a newer recording of the song featuring an orchestral backing, was featured in the Lifehouse Chronicles. Limp Bizkit covered in the song in 2003 and should be smacked for even thinking about covering this. But it was panned by Rolling Stone magazine readers, who named it the second worst cover song of all time. So, ha. Even though we don't like Rolling Stone's opinions.
I got to say this about any cover of any Who song. Their songs are so freaking good that, like, I don't know. Like, yes, it's Limp Bizkit, but it's such a great song. Like, can it even be screwed up? I don't even know. Because it is such an, especially this song, right, Lily? I mean, this is such a great song.
Yes, I love this song.
This is going to, okay, you guys, get your Kleenex out.
Oh, here we go.
Roger Daltrey's dog got run over on the day he recorded the vocals on this song.
Oh.
It was the first dog he ever had. The Who singer told, wait to hear what magazine he told this to. Not Rolling Stone. You guys ready? AARP magazine.
What?
That he was desperately trying to hold it together during the recording for this. But a little bit about it. I heard Townsend talking about this as well, saying that he says when Roger sings it, he says the song seems to him to be a lot about anger. He says when he sings the song, to him the song is about love. Very interesting. Again, what different singers can bring to it. When Fred Durst sings it, I don't know really what is going on there.
Well, there's nothing going on in his head. So, nothing. He feels nothing.
You know why?
Because he doesn't have a brain.
No. Yeah, I'll tell you why.
If I only had a brain.
He did it all for the nookie.
No. I'll bet. There's one concert I wouldn't have been a groupie at, by the way.
Oh, my God. hold a second. I'm behind here. We missed going. I have to type them into my notes. And then Behind Blue Eyes. And... And are we on the final stretch?
We're on the final stretch. God.
See, this is the thing. This album starts so strong, and it takes you on this amazing journey, and it ends on one of the greatest rock tunes in the history of rock music.
Yeah. Which is Won't Get Fooled Again. And also the longest song on the album at 8.5 minutes long. Townsend wrote the song as one of the closing numbers on Lifehouse, and the lyrics criticize revolution and power to symbolize the spiritual connection he had found in music via the works of his two spiritual leaders. He programmed a mixture of human traits into a synthesizer and used it as the main backing instrument throughout the song. It has been performed as a staple of the band's set list since 1971, often as a set closer, and was the last song drummer Keith Moon played live with the band. As well as being a hit, the song has achieved critical praise. It has been covered by several artists, such as Van Halen, who took their version to number one on the Billboard. It has been used for several TV shows and films and in some political campaigns. Townsend described the song as that screams defiance at those who feel any cause is better than no cause. He later said that the song was not strictly anti-revolution, despite the lyric, "We'll be fighting in the streets," but stressed that the revolution could be unpredictable, adding, "Don't expect to see what you expect to see. Expect nothing and you might gain everything." John Entwistle later said that the song showed Townsend saying the things that really mattered to him and saying them for the first time. So this was sort of like a message that he was trying to get out there.
Yeah, he said that revolutions, you know, it's summed up in the line,
meet the new boss. Same
as the old boss. Mm-hmm. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Legit.
And, you know, and guys, I know we just had an election. Same crap, guys. I'm sorry.
Just a different day.
Just, yeah. Yeah, exactly. This is really interesting because you have to understand a little bit of history of the Who if you don't know. We were talking about this. I don't know if Lily was here when we were talking about Kevin and I were talking. Lily was here. We were... Daltrey and Townsend have anger
another drink.
Issues. Both have serious
no,
anger issues.
No, they do not.
And
stop
would
it.
Literally get into literal punch-ups right on stage. And especially Daltrey was a real brawler, man. He was like,
scrappers.
He was a tough, yeah, he was a scrappy
They're
dude.
Scrappers.
He didn't back down from a fight. And so the scream like that he does when it comes back in there is considered by almost everybody as the greatest scream in rock.
Yes.
Period. But however, it was so convincing that when he was cutting it, the rest of the band was eating lunch in another room, and they thought that Daltrey was attacking the engineer.
That's great.
They thought he was going to Glyn Johns. Because it was so convincing. They were like, oh, no. He's brawling with these. You know, he's beating up our engineer.
I mean, that's what happens when you have a reputation.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, goodness gracious. But in any case, it is a long tune. Later on, there was a single that was released, cut down to 3 minutes 35 seconds. Daltrey was like really kind of like, didn't like that.
Yeah, no.
He didn't like the stuff being chopped up. And, you know, would make up any excuse. Right. We know the 3 minute pop song is a kind of a thing, but have you ever heard of a song called Bohemian Rhapsody?
I have.
Yes.
I have heard of that.
Have you ever heard a song called MacArthur Park?
Yes.
Paradise by the Dashboard Light.
Paradise by the Dashboard
Yes.
Light. Yes. There's nothing wrong with long tunes. The song is almost like a mini album in itself. It takes you on this journey, and you can do that because it is 8 minutes. We can talk about some of the songs by Bruce Springsteen, like Jungle Land, and there's different songs like that that like they have to be that long. You need all those parts because that adds to the whole sort of like visual evocativeness of the song. It takes you on this ride. So I have no, I of course me, and I'm sure you out there listening have no issue with the length of the song. What a bookend, mm-hmm. though. Mm-hmm. You know, Bubba O'Reilly and Won't Get Fooled Again.
Like, it works,
you know,
for me.
And I want to bring this up because the album ends so strong. It begins to strong, ends to strong, it's strong the whole way through. That they went and released later on versions of this album with extra songs. Hmm. And personally, I think the album's perfect as it is. And every time I listen to it on Spotify or something, I can't get to the stop button fast enough because it don't. I'm sorry,
don't hear the
Pete.
Rest.
I love your songs and you're a great songwriter. But when I want to sit down and listen to Who's Next, I want to hear Who's Next. I don't, you know what I mean? And I'll go back and listen to your other songs some other time. But like, when this album is just absolutely perfect the way that it is, nothing really needed to be added. But anyway, so before we do that, the other thing I wanted to point out to people is when these were released on cassette tape, the song Is Over is actually on side two.
I know the order's wrong. They're not wrong, but different.
They just changed. That's the one thing they changed. Yeah. They had to change that. And it was a common thing. I don't know if you guys remembered that. Did you buy cassette tapes at all?
Yeah.
That sometimes you would get it, and then they would have friends at school be like, wait a minute, this out of order. And we would talk about it. It was something we talked like at the lunch table.
Didn't have to do with like the length.
Yeah, it had to do with the length because cassettes were really limited about what they could do. Just a kind of interesting fact toyed there. Kevin, favorite tracks on the album?
Hey, thanks, Lou, for asking. Okay, let me tell you something. Hey, Lou, you know me, right? You remember my mom?
Yes.
Right? We called her Bubba, right? So she was Bubba O'Connor. Right?
Aww.
So, of course, Bubba O'Reilly's going to be my favorite. You know that part in the song, you know, where they're like, don't cry? Always reminds me of my mom. You know why? Wow. Well, with my mom, it was more like, don't cry, or I'll give you something to cry about. You know what I'm saying? So, love that. That's my favorite one there, you know. Makes me remember my mom.
It's weepy. It's weepy for you.
Okay, so Bubba O'Reilly is Kevin's favorite track on the album. Lily, you got a favorite?
Behind Blue Eyes is my favorite.
Why?
Because it's just a beautiful song, and I like the Blue Eyes. And I don't care what anybody says, there's not enough songs about Blue Eyes. Van Morrison.
Blue Eyes crying in the rain.
Could have made that about Blue Eyes, just saying.
How about you, Lou? Lou, what's your favorite one? Tell us now. We want to know. Inquiring minds want to know, Lou.
I love every single song on the album. This album is one of my most near and dear to my heart. But I probably was just going to rock out with Won't Get Fooled Again because when I was a wee lad, that video, and you guys all know what I'm talking about. If you haven't seen it, just go look it up. There's a video of them doing this. At the time, before there were really videos, before MTV and all that, and that when he does the scream, and Townsend slides across the stage.
Yeah.
I was like, I got to play rock and roll.
Yep.
This is what I'm doing with my life. Right? Rock and roll is everything. This is the coolest. Not to sound like Beavis and Butthead, this is the coolest thing I have ever seen. It just, so for that alone, but I went through a time where Getting in Tune, I played that song over and over, and I learned to sing it. I learned to play it. I was just absolutely in love with that song as well. But I'm going to go with Won't Get Fooled Again. and I do love Pete's observation. I think it's really mature and really way ahead of its time on revolutions and politics and stuff like that. It's all bullshit. Great show. Any other audience comments or anything before we
that's all we got.
Get on to This Day in Music.
I think people just like listening to us tonight.
I know. We love you guys, too. We really do. Go to wolfscustoms.online, rockrageradio.com, lulombardimusic.com, and don't forget to give us a review on iTunes. Send a pic or a screen cap and get entered to win a T-shirt. We have on This Day in Rock. Let's do this real quick. Well, This Day in Rock. Released Brown Sugar, the 1971. This day was speaking of 1971.
Ooh, it's a good year.
Who's Next was not the only thing that happened that year. The Rolling Stones released Brown Sugar, taken from their latest album, Sticky Fingers, the first a record on their own label, Rolling Stones Records, which introduced the infamous Licking Tongue Lips and logo.
Yay!
So that's when that first appeared. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The song was, they wanted to call the song Black, P-U-S-S-Y.
Huh.
But
which today would have been absolutely fine. It would have been on a children's
only
album.
If Cardi B did it.
Right,
that'd be
fine. Yeah.
But, you know, so that just kind of gives you an insight as to where the boys' heads were
We knew.
Because now I've got that song going in my head with the new lyrics. Okay, yeah.
Oh, my.
This day in 73, Bowie released his sixth studio album, Aladdin Sane. The name of the album is a pun on a lad insane. Two hit singles included on the album preceded its release. Drive-In Saturday, which is a song that is not heard as much today. But Gene Genie lives on his back. Elton John went to number one on the U.S. Singles Charts this day in 74 with Benny and the Jets.
I love that song.
Beautiful song. Great, great track. And Paul McCartney, Band on the Run, went to number one on the U.S. Album Charts this day in 1974. So this is a good day for music. Thin Lizzy released their ninth studio album. Featured guitarist Gary Moore. Rest in peace, Gary Moore. On this day in 1982, David Crosby was arrested when police found him preparing cocaine backstage in his dressing room before a show. Preparing cocaine?
Preparing,
you know,
it.
I'm preparing
cocaine.
He's got
cocaine. A little chef's knife.
He's got to cut it up, you know, and make the... He's got to make the rails.
The first,
not that I know anything
Lily,
about
you
that.
Will love this.
I
1993, the first Aerosmith Day was observed in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts after the band were given their very own holiday.
And they deserve it.
That's awesome.
Congratulations.
Happy birthdays. Let's do some happy birthdays before we wrap up for today. Jazz composer, American arranger Bill Conti. Happy birthday. Jack Cassidy.
Whoa.
Not related to David Cassidy or Sean,
Sean
Cassidy.
Cassidy.
No. From the Jefferson Airplane and Hot Tuna.
That's just a horrible name.
Mm. Lowell tuna? George. From Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention, and of course, better known from Little Feat, Dixie Chicken, Willin', all those great songs. Happy birthday, Lowell George. Mm. The Reverend Al Green was born this day in 1946. One of the, I think, coolest drummers ever, and Keith and I are going to have to talk about this when I go to see him in a couple weeks. Max Weinberg from Bruce Springsteen's East Street Band. Great drummer, in my opinion. And was what, on the Tonight Show? Was he on the Tonight Show?
Was he Tonight Show or Conan? Was he with Conan?
Somebody chime in and correct
us
on
that. I feel like he was
that.
The Tonight Show.
Peebo Bryson. If ever you're in my arms again. Remember that song from the 80s?
I like the
Born this day in 1951. Louis Johnson.
Who's Louis Johnson?
Louis Johnson from the Brothers Johnson.
Oh, Strawberry Letter 22.
Yep, Stomp. Yeah, and he worked on Off the Wall and Thriller with Michael Jackson. Don't stop till you get enough.
Oh.
Conan O'Brien, Late Night, and The Tonight Show.
You're both right.
All
right. There was a guitar player that did two records with the Hot Red Hot Chili Peppers before John Frusciante. His name was Hillel Slovak.
Wow.
We don't know him, but we do know Mark Ford. Great guitarist in the Black Crows.
Yes, yes.
Of course.
Of course.
Aaron Lewis from the band Stain.
Sure.
And
Lou Bega.
Oh, little ruined it. I was going to do a little bit of reading.
She's so excited, too.
Need.
Because I used to dance to that song.
Used to.
Yeah, I don't
think you still
German,
do.
I'm old.
He's a German mambo musician.
Sure.
What?
I didn't know he was German.
See?
Yeah, that's cool.
All right, I'm not going to make that joke. then listen to Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Go to ludinirockandrollcircus.com. No, do not go there.
No.
Go to Lulu. I'm sorry. These guys are joking with me and they get me all mixed
now.
Up here. Pittsburgh, Kevin.
Come
quit
on
messing
now.
Out.
He's a distraction.
You want to go to lulombardymusic.com. You want to go to rockrageradio.com. You want to go to wolfscustoms.online. And don't forget, please give us some great reviews on iTunes. It's really important. It really helps the show. And we're happy to give away t-shirts for that because we need the help.
We don't need the help.
We need help.
Right. Now, wait a minute. Maybe you don't because you got giant knockers.
What?
My boobs like that, I wouldn't need help either.
Her eyes are up here, buddy.
I feel come like on. If you had boobs like this, you would be studied.
I'd never leave the house.
I'd be jogging and hit myself in the head and be laying on the side of the road.
No, it's not that bad. It's fine.
So anyways, guys, hey, it's been a lot of fun. Lily, go ahead and tell everybody about you, what you got going on.
My show is Hot Licks with Lily Six on Rock Rage Radio, Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. You could just go to rockrageradio.com or download the free app to your phone. You can listen, and it's 24-hour music. But my show is the most important at 6 p.m. on Thursday.
Awesome. And a shout-out to our good friend Pittsburgh Kevin. Any parting thoughts or anything, Pittsburgh
Kevin? Guys, I'm just so happy to be here with Yins.
All right.
I love Yins.
Pittsburgh Aww. Kevin survived a fire in the past week or so, and as it turned out, most of his stuff
all my
was salvageable.
Pretty much okay.
Good for you, buddy. Yay. Good for you. All right, everybody, have a great week, and we'll catch you all on the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.